G'day, this is Macca with the podcast. You've probably missed the program and are catching up or just revisiting because you like the sound of Australian voices. So do I. Speaking of voices, I had a conniption. My mum used to say a conniption. You can look it up if you like. With my voice this week, something went down the wrong way. Anyway, had a few issues, but we're still here. I love the voices of Australia here, and I'm grateful every day that you, the listeners, make this program. Well, I love it. Enjoy. G'day, this is Macca.
Morning, Macca. It's Garnet.
Hi, Garnet.
Macca, I'm calling you from Sydney, buddy. I'm ringing about something a little bit concerning with a State Heritage Park, Callan Park.
I know Callan Park, yep. It's on Victoria Road.
Yeah, Victoria Road there, definitely. Mm. We're concerned that council and the state government wanting to put in synthetic turf or plastic grass into Callan Park. I was wondering if you had a thought about that. I know there's a whole heap of environmental issues and concerns with microplastics. It just seems a crazy thing. If we can't grow grass in Australia, what's going on?
Well, we talked about it some years ago when David Hill was here, and on Saturdays, like there'd been some rain. The time was where you played soccer or you played rugby league or whatever you played on Saturday morning or Sunday, whenever it was, rain, hail or shine, unless it was pouring or something. But if there'd been some rain, but now you can't play in the grass because you might damage the grass, which is daggy, which is silly. So the other day when there'd been some rain around, not a lot of rain, but a bit of rain, so there was no one playing because they want to protect. I don't know what it is, Garnet, So what's Callan Park? Used to be a mental institution. What is it now?
It's a state heritage parkland, open to community members.
And what about the buildings? What do they use those for?
The buildings are currently being used by a whole heap of people. So you've got writers in there, you've got artists, you've got film sets, you've got a whole heap of things going on at Callan Park. There's some old functional ones that they're going to demolish, which is, not ideal, but it's things that happen. But yeah, the concern that the community have is a little bit, or I and myself and a lot of other people, is right down on the waterfront. The football clubs are wanting to put in synthetic turf right down into the harbour within the foreshore building line. And we're just going, doesn't seem like a good idea to us. I don't know, you've obviously had some concerns with making sure we're doing the right thing for our environment. So yeah, just thought, I'll let you know about it and see what your thoughts are.
Well, look, I don't know. As I said, they're protecting the grass. Maybe it's they can put the grass down and they don't have to look after it. You know what I mean? That's the name of the game. There'll be some reason, specious reason, maybe for doing it. It won't be for the environment or anything. It'll be just because it's fit for purpose. If you know what I mean. Maybe they've got to look after the lawns or something, and they haven't got people, or they don't want to. Oh, look, I don't know, Garnet. I haven't got a clue, but.
I'd much rather. Our landscapers and all our landscapers down there and the heritage people and concerns have all raised their alarm a little bit. So, I just thought, Macca's obviously got a bit of a vibe on this, and I thought I'd give you a ring and see what you thought.
Well, I'd much rather play on walk on grass than synthetic grass, but sporting fields, like hockey. I used to play hockey all the time when I was a kid. And, of course, we played on grass and it was a bit uneven and whatever, but now hockey's always played on synthetic surfaces, and a lot of things are, but you're not talking about sport. I mean, something nice about grass. One of the rugby league coaches from State of Origin some years ago had all these players take their shoes off and walk around on the grass to get in touch with the earth, but we don't seem to want to do that anymore, do we? I mean, not that that's going to win you football games. I thought it was a bit thought it was a bit strange, but
well, I think they did end up winning, actually, so maybe it did work.
Maybe it did, Garnet. I don't know. Garnet, that's an interesting name. It's a precious stone, sort of, is it, or semi?
Semi-precious stone. So mum and dad didn't cop any grief as a young teenager, only semi-precious. So I couldn't even call me a precious stone.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Well, I'll have a look. So when's it slated to go?
Well, it went to the planning panel the other day, and they knocked it back down on waterfront. They put it up on, because they wanted to put two fields in. And they said, look, you're going to pollute the harbour, and there's concerns with the microplastics and other bits and pieces. And council were going to build in the foreshore zone, which is 15 metres from the seawall. And, so it's been knocked back once, but the mayor here is saying that he's going to, appeal and put more pressure on it to convert it to plastic.
Is this for sporting fields, is it?
It is for a sporting field. The local footy club of football club, our main district. I mean, you know, they deserve a better field. It is pretty terrible at the moment, but council haven't done best practice, which is a new form of field. You know, there's no drainage down there. There's no proper irrigation. No one's checked the soil. They're using turf cultivars that are over 100 years old. So you just go, there's a whole of your other options rather than going jumping straight to plastification. You could.
Well, good luck, Garnet. Good luck.
Cheers, Macca.
Nice to talk to you.
Yeah.
Louise is, where are you, Louise?
In Tobia, Macca.
Tobia, right. Yes, Tobia, not Tobia.
That's it.
Near Gundy. Gundawindi.
That's it, near Gundy.
Yeah.
And we're driving cattle around the stock route.
Oh, are you really? Tell me why.
Well, it's been so dry, terribly hot summer, no rain, no grass, no feed. And then we thought, righto, we'll go droving and find a bit of grass.
So how long have you been on the stock route?
Probably 3 weeks now.
Uh-huh. And how are you finding that?
Oh, it's great. It's the best life. We took our kids droving when they were in their teenage years, and they said it was the best holiday they ever had.
Well, you would when you're a kid. Were they out of school or was it,
I was in the holidays and you just, you know, they just camped by the side of the road. They're on the horses every day. They've got their dogs. You tend the cattle. Life is pretty good.
Exactly. No one's telling you what, well, they are telling you what to do in a sort of a way, but
it's pretty free compared to the rest of life.
Yeah. So you live, where do you live in Tobia?
No, we live a bit west of Tobia towards St. George.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and we run cattle there.
And how many cattle have you got on the road with you?
No, we've only got about 100 at the moment.
Mm.
So we sold up like a lot of people earlier in the year when the situation was bad with feed and the price of fuel went through the roof and tariffs coming in soon for beef going to China. So it's sort of, you know, the cattle market was good. So like many people, we sold up a lot of them, but we thought we'd just try and keep our core breeding herd.
Well, I tell you what, I wish I was out there with you this morning. I don't know how we'd get about doing our program, but it would be nice to be out there, Louise. And I often think of when people ring from various places and they're doing stuff and they're on the road, especially out near Gundawindi.
Yeah, it's very, we're just on a back road. We're not on a main highway, so it's very quiet. You probably see, you know, 20 cars a day. So it's pretty easy work, but it's constant when you're driving. You've just got to tend the cattle and keep them going. You've got to watch for holes in fences, gates open, river crossings, things like that.
And have you got the kids with you?
No, I've got our son's with us at the moment, yeah.
Mm. And how old were the kids when you took them on the road before?
Oh, they would have been, you know, probably around 10 to 15 years old.
Oh, I would have loved it.
Yeah, they had their own horses, so they had to tend them and, you know, you just have your horses with you every day, all day, and your dogs, and you just, your animals get very close to you and you're very attached to them.
And they're attached to you. They're lovely things. I love, animals. I love animals and cows and sheep and, They do. They get to know you, don't they? They get to know you and they just rely on you. They depend on you and they look to you for comfort and all those sort of things, don't they? Even though they're just dumb beasts, if you know what I mean.
The cattle get to know which person is hunting them on which horse and what dogs they have. And will those dogs just herd them or will those dogs get a bit more aggressive with them?
Mm.
They know. They can look at the dog and they go, well, we know that dog's going to hurt us, so we better move back in and not keep poking our nose out where we shouldn't be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, quite amazing. But, yeah, we've only had one little stampede when we were near the power line, near the railway line, and a truck came down the railway line, and for some reason it just set them off and they just took off.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
Yeah, so it does still happen.
How long will you be on the road, Louise?
It depends how long we can get permits for to stay out grazing the stock. Depends what the season does. We've been very lucky. There's been 30 to 50 mils of rain 2 weeks ago and then another 20 mils in the last week. So that's really got the clover and things sparking up.
Well, I hope to see you. I hope to meet you sometime, Louise. You never know.
If you want to come sit by the campfire, we'll be out for a few more weeks.
All right. Good on you. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks, Maco. Thanks for the show. Bye.
It's a pleasure. Bye. Matty's in Laurieton. Morning, Matt. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Maca.
Yep.
How are you? It's Hutcho from Laurieton. How are you?
Hutcho. Fabulous.
Beautiful day up here on the mid-north coast.
Of New South Wales, yep.
Yeah, we are. Yeah, Laurieton underneath the beautiful North Brother Mountain. I'm sure you've been and seen it. Beautiful area before.
Middle Brother, yeah, Little Brother, yep. What's on your mind, Matty?
Yeah, we've got the big Lake Cateye charity fish auction on this weekend. So we've all been out fishing, all the local fishers. It's, of course, a fishing area here. And this morning I'm out icing down the catch from a big day out on the ocean yesterday. But the Lake Cateye auction's one of those, it's a fishing comp that we have for a bit of fun, but it's a unique one in a way that we actually have approval from the DPI. We hold a big auction at the end of the fishing comp. All the fish get donated and we raise money for the local sea rescue and the local bushfire brigade. So
you're a big fisherman, Matt. You fish all the time?
Mad fisherman, mate. Yeah, part of the local fishing clubs, of course, and love doing all the fishing competitions. Love a great feed of fish, but just love the sport of fishing.
What's the shark story, Matty? Out there,
look, they are out of control. They're a little bit. They've tipped the balance a little bit out there, Macca. I've been fishing all my life on the coast here, and there's two things that have happened. That the numbers have exploded, but also their behaviour's changed a little bit towards the way that they sort of learnt where a catch is. You know, so they've learnt to come in close, and they've learnt to get in around those bait schools, and they've learnt, you know, the sound of a boat, and they'll come in around boats and things like that now. So yeah, it's definitely a problem. Macca, I never lost a fish to a shark up until probably 5 years ago. And now if you're fishing in summer off the mid-north coast, you'll lose one most trips. So things have changed.
All right. So that's on today, the fishing auction at where? At Laurieton or Lake Cateye?
That's at Lake Cateye, just north of us, between us and Port Macquarie. And
I'd love to be there, mate.
Down there. Yeah, oh, it's a great fun day, and everyone likes to have a bit of a, most of the fishers actually buy their fish back as well, you know, competing for each other or try to take their mate's fish off them, you know. It's a bit of fun.
We should be there doing an outside broadcast this morning. We'd have a lot of fishy tales, mate. Next time you have one, let me know and I'll try and get there and we'll do a program there in the morning.
Oh, it'd be great. Every year they hold it. We'll give you a ring next year, mate.
Good on you. Thanks, Matty.
Take it easy, Macca.
Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. It's Bernie calling from Adelaide Hills.
Hi, Bern.
Hey, Garl. I just wanted to let you know we've lost a buddy Australian legend, Howard Hendrick.
Who's Howard Hendrick? Tell us all.
He was 102 years old, lived in Loxton, and he flew 31 missions in a Lancaster over Germany.
Wow. His name was?
Howard Hendrick.
Howard.
And I really encouraged Loxton people to ring up this morning. Yeah, I had the really pleasure of meeting him once. I've read his book. It's called Full Circle, and it's an incredible book. And I think he's got a French Legion of Honour award as well. And, yeah, he brought his crew home 31 times over Germany.
So he was a pilot, was he?
Yeah, he was the pilot. He, one incredible story, had to dive from 22,000 feet down to 6,000 with Messerschmitts chasing him. And the plane was unserviceable when he got back to the UK. The airfield, so without Howard, we wouldn't have the country we have today.
No, it's amazing to think of too, isn't it? Every time I see that movie, Saving Private Ryan, and that's been, you know, that's on every 6 months it'll turn up, but all those young American and British that just got slaughtered on the beach at Normandy when they retook Europe and stuff like that. And I don't know that people would do that anymore, but they do. You look at the Ukraine, and I think the Russians have lost at least 1.5 million young men, and the Ukrainians have probably lost 200,000 or 300,000 men. But people will still go to war. I mean, and as you said, Bob and Command was just the whole deal, wasn't it? It was the worst of the worst because, you know, the attrition rate was just unbelievable, wasn't it, Bern?
Yeah, it certainly was, Mac. I mean, like I said, I've read his book a couple of times, and just that's just a small snapshot. So it's incredible to read that, and I guess from Loxton in South Australia, there'd be a lot of people with a lot more stories than I have. And I was just very fortunate to meet Howard once and have a chat in the local cafe there, where he's got his own corner named after him, and he's got his own street in Loxton, and bloody good story, and it probably is movie worthy, Macca.
Well, I think it is. Bernie, what do you do with yourself when you in your spare time? What do you do?
I work for BHP, Macca.
Uh-huh. What do you do?
I look after with a team of people. We look after the pastoral relationships throughout Copper South Australia.
Uh-huh. And is that good? You'll enjoy that?
Yeah. So we've got 3 mines in South Australia, 2 of which are based on private cattle pastoral leases. I think you talked about Lawson a couple of weeks ago. Lawson's parents are on one of those leases, McBill Peak.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, little Lawson. He helped him because his dad went base over Apex on the bike and broke his leg and things like that. And Lawson saved the day.
Yeah.
He's only about 12.
So that's what I do for work.
And is that good? You'll enjoy that?
Yeah, I do. I enjoy the outback. And, I think people say the further north you go, the nicer people get. So, I'm out to... Not a bad analogy.
They say all sorts of things, don't they? Makes you want to move north. Bernie, good on you, mate. Nice to talk to you. I'll play this for Howard, okay?
Yeah, remembering Howard today, and I encourage everyone from Loxton to tell a few stories and celebrate his life.
Good on you, mate. G'day, this is Macca.
Good morning, Macca.
Morning.
How are you? My name's Maggie. I'm in Bendigo. Huntley, just north of Bendigo in central Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
I was cleaning the barbecue this morning when
you
said, after a do last night.
Yep.
And you said, give us a ring if you're feeding the horses. Now, I've got several girls with me. They've been feeding horses. We're at a carriage driving event this weekend.
Uh-huh.
Where we come out, and at this weekend we do 3 phases. We've got a dressage type event, and then we do a speed cones or a cones event, which is similar to show jumping, but because we've got wheels, we don't jump, obviously. So we drive through a cones course, and then we've got a couple of obstacles. So similar, a lot of people might understand, like for horse trials, ridden 3-day eventing. And some of our drivers come from the riding world over to here, where you can continue onto this sort of event. Prince Philip sort of pushed it along many years ago.
I was going to say that he was big on carriage driving, wasn't he? The Duke of Edinburgh.
Yes, he got it more or less started, I guess, and pushed it and made it a big thing. We've got ladies here from across Australia and some gentlemen from across Victoria, who've come up here.
And Maggie, what do you like about it? Do you like the horses or the carriages or what is it?
The best fun you can have sitting down.
come on.
It is. We're here and we've circled the wagons. We've got a couple of girls here.
Carriages, please, carriages.
We've set up our camp. We clean out our floats and we camp here and have a great social evening. The speed events are usually the pretty popular ones through the cones and the obstacles, but you get to challenge yourself in it, and you can also just go rally driving and pleasure driving. So the carriage sport is pretty wide. We've got a couple of juniors coming up, 10 or 11, and we've got some ladies here into their 70s.
I think it'd be nice to see. You can't drive a carriage on the road. Well, you couldn't. I suppose you can, but on a road. But it'd be nice to get on a back track somewhere with a carriage and 2 or something, wouldn't it? And just go for a bit of a burn, and you could have, there's plenty of room. You could have your picnic basket in the back and stop somewhere. I mean, can't horses give them some feed? I think it'd be a lovely day.
It is. We do some of that just on general weekends, but then we have events like this. We do go on the road. A lot of us train to get fit for the bigger competitions on the road. And up here at Bendigo Huntley, it's great. We've got the Whipstick State Forest behind us, which we can go for hours just doing exactly what you said.
Oh, the things that people do, Maggie. I'm never surprised. I think it's lovely. You've got to find something in your life that you love to do that gives you pleasure. That's the secret of life, I think. You can do all the things you have to do, but, you know, if you've got something you love to do, whether it's carriage driving or cleaning things or painting or whatever it is, you need that in your life, don't you?
Oh, definitely, definitely. And there's nothing better than getting up at 6 o'clock this morning cleaning barbecue. but you got a great group of people around us, quite a few of them have come from riding experiences and either get a little bit older or want a change of scenery, and this offers everything. We've got, as I said, pleasure drive, camping and competitions to test the skills. So,
all right, what's it like there this morning? Where are you, in Huntley?
Yes, which is just on the edge of Bendigo. It's a bit fresh, but we've got blue sky. It rained last night on us, but we were finished with our barbecue.
With
our
barbecue, of course, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so all right. Touch wood. Great day. So thank you.
It's lovely to talk to you, Maggie. Good on you.
This is the All Over News.
This is the All Over News, and an email marked "The Good Old Telephone Days" from Ted Reese in WA. He says, "I would have telephoned you about this subject. However, it's been freezing cold here in Donnybrook, WA, and by the time I get out of bed on Sundays, you're just about ready to finish. Over the WA long weekend, from late Saturday the 30th of May until Monday the 1st of June, a large part of WA experienced severe storms and power outages. Some people down the southwest had no power for 5 days or more. We had no power on and off for 32 hours. During this period, we had none of the following: internet, mobile phone, and landline phone. Prior to the NBN, normal phones operated over a copper cable network, as did the internet, and were powered by telephone exchange batteries providing 50 volts DC for speech and a low voltage AC network for ringing current. During a power failure, a generator would keep the batteries charged and the network remained operable. These days, that's history because the NBN requires power at the home and outdoor equipment, etc., to make things work. If anyone had an emergency during this period, they would not have been able to contact anyone by normal means, which could have been a disaster for them. So much for technology. People in power have been denigrating the old copper network for ages. However, in my opinion, it should be restored for landlines because it's not subject to the failures of the NB bloody N, and constant access to communication is very important for a lot of people these days. In conclusion, I worked for Telecom / Telstra for 26 and a half years, so I know what I'm talking about, says Ted Rees, former Cogra High School boy. From Peter McNeil, re D-Day and its commemoration the other day, what a shame about the sparse coverage given to D-Day. Yes, as you said, the Yanks did save the world, but as mentioned, at the cost of a huge crop of white crosses. The British were running out of men by 1944. Why can't news coverage reflect this? All we got on AAP News is a dissection of the speech by the Secretary of War from the US. What about something on how many veterans are left or something else from commemorations? Reminds me of when Biden went to Normandy. All we got from that was a dissection of the speech too. What a pack of slack journos. What a pack of useless, lazy companies. Apparently, when Saving Private Ryan was first shown, there were veterans in the men's room throwing up as it was that real. Steven Spielberg didn't get paid to direct the movie, as he considered it his duty to do it and to do it right. And our media companies can't give it 5 minutes. One totally disconnected fact from D-Day, the Allies took with them 22 million jerry cans. Now, just imagine how you make and transport 22 million jerry cans, let alone fill them up. Thank you, Peter McNeil. And from Suzanne Katz, Australian juice disappointment. I'm feeling cross this morning to look at the back panel of my apple juice container and find absolutely no Australian apples used. I've bought this product for some months, believing the note on the front label saying 100% Australian made and owned. Today I actually looked at the back and it's imported. What about Australian apples? Could you alert your many listeners who want to support Australian-grown products to this? Always read the back. Suzanne, I don't think people are concerned about it. You know, some people are and many people aren't. This is the All Over News, and was saddened the other day to learn of the passing of our great friend to the program, John Olsen. John Olsen's the bloke who walked thousands of Ks across Australia, 3 times, I think, in a diagonal direction to raise awareness and funds for Leukodystrophy Australia. He was inspired to do this because his partner, Vida Brazionis, suffered from this disease. Leukodystrophies are a group of rare, progressive and fatal genetic disorders that affect the central nervous system by destroying the myelin sheath, protecting nerve cells. I think Johnny Olsen is the only person to have walked diagonally across Australia three times without a support crew, hauling his gear in a heavy motorless trolley. I spoke to him many occasions, even met up with him once on the Southern Highway, I think in Gippsland. This is just one of our conversations with Johnny Olsen. Our walking correspondent's on the line, John Olsen. Good morning, John.
How are you, Macca? I'm in Augusta Caravan Park at the moment.
Right down the bottom of Western Australia.
Yes, and yesterday I did the big deed and walked out to the lighthouse and down to the water's edge and got my bottle of water and put my left foot in, so I've now walked diagonally across Australia.
So you're finished now? Your walk's over?
Well, I've still got to walk up to Perth in the new year to deliver a letter to the Lord Mayor, but as far as the walk across Australia, it's done now.
What's your reaction to it all?
Look, it's hard to say. On both my walks, this sort of thing's happened. I'm sort of glad I've done what I wanted to do, and in one way and in other ways, it's a bit sad. But I really am looking forward to getting home this time. I'm missing the family. And
it's a great feat. I don't know who amongst us would be considering walking diagonally across Australia. And this is not your first time. You've done this before, Johnny. These old knees of mine, as you might sing, have seen a bit, haven't they? They've done a bit.
Yeah, especially one of them. Don't think I'll get another walk in. Even the surgeon said my next trip will be for an artificial knee, and he said you won't be walking across Australia in one of them, but I can't see why not. But anyway, so see what happens.
Well, you could ride or cycle around Australia or something, John.
Yes, well, I've met quite a few of them. I met a very interesting bloke there a couple of weeks ago, Brian. He had a kidney transplant 28 years ago, and he's well into his 70s, I'd say, and he's driving one of those trikes, you know, the three-wheeled motorbikes, and the great old time, so you never know.
How long has it taken you, John?
Look, it's taken me nearly 9 months, a bit longer than I thought, but it's been the longest limp across Australia, mate, if anything else.
Yeah.
And in the middle of the year, I'm making a special effort to get to Canberra. There's a young bloke I met on the way called Clinton, and a young Aboriginal bloke, and he's walking from Perth to Canberra, and I met him on the Great Central Road. I made a promise that I'd be in Canberra to greet him when he finally gets to there, and I was very impressed with the young fella, and turns out he's probably the youngest bloke to walk across Australia, and I'm the oldest, so we've got something in common.
You're all part of the Long Distance Walking Club, John.
Your listeners and truckies and all the police officers on the way down and all those very generous people who stop and give me a bit of fruit and a bit of can of Coke and all that sort of stuff. So
you'll be up in Perth, what, in a month or two?
I can take my time now, and there's plenty of Lions clubs on the way, so I'll be stopping in to visit them.
Stop and smell the daisies, John. Great to talk to you, and congratulations, John.
Thanks, Macca.
This is the All Over News, and it was a great pleasure for me the other day to bump into Gillon McLachlan, former CEO of the AFL and now CEO of Tabcorp. I just happened to be in the same place as him. I saw him walking past. We were in a restaurant, and I was walking down the hallway, and he came out of the gents, and the rest is history. I'm talking to Gillon McLachlan. How are you, Gillon? It's lovely to see you here in Sydney.
Well, Macca, it's great to see you. Unusual circumstance and setting, and we haven't met before, but I've listened to you for many years, and it's great to meet you.
Melbourne's always fascinated me because I love Melbourne. There's something traditional about Melbourne, and I think football's the whole thing that glues it together. Everybody hates Collingwood or Essendon or whatever, but they sort of love them in a lot of ways. And it's quite different here to Sydney. Sydney, we just throw things away here in Sydney, but Melbourne clings to the good things in life, I think. Do you find that?
Yeah, I do. I grew up in Adelaide and moved to Melbourne, you know, about 20 even. You know, I think of myself as a Melbournean Victorian, and I think it's one of the great cities of the world, and I think the AFL's at the heart of it. It's about the deep cultural links to that game, that it's a game for everyone. It's totally inclusive, and if you can find yourself in that game, you'll be accepted and you'll be part of your community. If you're part of that community, you're part of Australia, and it's the gateway to inclusion. Once you're in, you can be defined by it. It's a game, I think, of skill and courage and conviction, and then contribution and sacrifice and service. And I think that, you know, the bedrock of this country is built on all the things that I think can come out in this game, which is loyalty, courage, service, community, and I'm pretty proud of it, and I think certainly it's the heartbeat of Melbourne.
And it doesn't matter if they come from Croatia or from the Sudan, they seem to, everybody gets involved, and that's the great thing about multiculturalism. I think football's at the base of that, really.
Totally. I mean, it is, you know, that whether the Greek or Italian migrants, you know, whatever, Carlton or
Jezelenko,
all the versions that it's, I was always believed there is no bad footy clubs, just your footy club. And if you are someone who comes wanting to commit to the club and make a contribution, you're totally accepted, no matter what your background. And that's that inclusive nature of football and football clubs that I think is this migrant journey of Australia, and it finds itself through football. And you know, you get defined by who you are, not where you came from. And I think that's pretty important.
The other thing about Melbourne that seems to me, a cab driver rang me up one Sunday morning, said, Dudley, I mean, he said, Macko, Melbourne's all about football, racing and gambling.
it was a bit... And the rest of the time's wasted.
Exactly. You've got to, if I went to Melbourne and started a business, you've got to be connected with the football. I mean, everybody knows everybody. I know Jack Kennedy. Collingwood, yeah.
He straightened my nose. I broke my nose twice, and Jack straightened it both times. I'm here to prove your point.
Isn't that's really mighty? So you're now CEO of Tabcorp,
yes,
and you were with the AFL, but you'll still be connected with football all the time, I suppose. Everybody is, aren't they?
Yeah, it'll never leave me, and I've left, and hopefully letting everyone else run it, but it's deep in your blood. And it's, you know, it's a very big-hearted town, Melbourne, and I think Sydney people don't quite understand it, and they may be dismissive, and maybe Melbournians are dismissive of Sydney, but they, you know, it's East Coast, West Coast and America a bit, and it's the crappy weather in Melbourne, and it's the, and the deep boroughs, and that's that tribalism that comes out, and you wear your colours and you live and die week to week on what's going on with your team, whether it's at the community level, the kids level or the AFL level. I'm just a punter like everyone else on every sense, including at the football. And I, you know, I've got four kids who all play footy. I spend most of my weekends watching football at the local community club, and in the old days I'd then go off to the AFL, and I played and then was president of the same footy club for 20 years. So it shapes your life, and you decide on a weekly basis whether you're happy or sad, and it informs you, and I think it gives you a purpose and a richness that makes my weeks happy and fulfilled, and I think that's a lot of the town.
And you'd know everybody. We were in Ballarat one cold, freezing morning, and Fitzy came up. You'd know Fitzy, wouldn't you? He was the coach of the Ballarat football.
Yeah, Fitzgerald. Yeah. I don't know him. He was very famous, the Ballarat Roosters.
Yeah, and he wanted, I think he was trying to get them into the AFL, I think.
Yeah, he was a crazy man. I never met him, and I tried to be very open and accessible, except for the odd person, but I think he's one of those guys. His intentions were pure, he was passionate, and that's the point of it all, is passion and focus and purpose.
Gillan, it's great to meet you. You didn't have to get permission from the boss, did you, to talk to me? You didn't have to go to media department. Usually when I talk to people...
I'm without those anyway, and I hope I've survived. But I think that your voice has been in the speakers of many a car driving around this country on Sunday mornings and any other time that I miss. But it's a bit of a thrill to meet you. So thank you for your role in this incredible country.
Thank you, Gillan. It's lovely to meet you, mate. Sorry to pest you outside the gents, but...
Pleasure, pleasure.
G'day, this is Macca.
Are you talking to me, Macca?
I am. Sounds like it. Yep, good.
Oh, good morning, sweetheart. This is Cara in the Hunter Valley, 2 hours north of Sydney.
Yep.
I was calling to speak to you. Lovely topics this morning, by the way. Great show.
Thank you.
On the 3rd of June, a giant panda weighing 122 kilos on loan from China to South Korea gave birth to her fourth cub. So she's 122 kilos. This little girl cub is 171 grams and she's carrying her around in her mouth lovingly and cuddling her.
Wow.
And she's 800 times heavier than the baby. It's her fourth cub. And I wasn't aware, but I looked it up. Giant pandas, which are giants, obviously, consume between 14 to 40 kilos of bamboo every day.
Every day?
Yeah. And the mother's 12 years old, the father's 13 years old, and so they've been in South Korea for a while.
And how long does a panda live, do you know?
I'm not quite sure. That's the one thing I didn't research. I couldn't tell you. But I know that if they don't perform and have babies, trying to take them back, I know that.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, see, they're mates, aren't they? North Korea and China are besties. I can use that phrase.
Oh, no, it's South Korea. So I don't have overseas, so I don't know. Yeah. Oh,
right. There you go.
But anyway, look. Love your work. Love the show. Been watching for many decades. I'm 81 now, as I said, and I do house mining and look after people's dogs and cats and parrots and rats and houses, and it's good. Life's good.
Well, that's great. Have you had rain up there in the Hunter?
Yeah, we've had awful weather for the last week or so, but we do need the rain. But, you know, you get sick and tired of it when you're out trying to walk of a morning.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but anyway, it's lovely to talk to you. Thank you so much. I rang you 3 years ago when I rescued a Christmas beetle, and we had a long conversation about how scarce they are now.
Oh, look, it's one of my pet peeves is about insects and the lovely insects we have, you know, and all the suburbs that are being infilled, and there's no room for insects. And I love them. They're wonderful. You walk through and I used to see this little... Well, we used to call them splinter pools, but they're a lovely greeny, turquoisey colour, and you just, if you look and you'll find, but we spray too much, Cara. I'm quite convinced we spray too much stuff all over the joint.
We do, and I think some listeners are saying, oh, why doesn't she get off? But last week I found, clinging to a shop window glass front, a small stick insect, a very juvenile one.
Mm-hmm.
So I rescued it, and...
That's funny. I found one on the tyre of my car. It was parked in the carport, and I found one. I looked, and I said, there's a stick. And then, no, it was a stick insect, so I didn't want to touch it, so I just left it there. I don't know what happened to it. I hope it went into some of the leafery around the place.
Yeah, they eat rose leaves. I love the leaves of a rose bush, and I've got no roses, so I did find some rose leaves, and I set her up in a vine on my fence, you know, because it's just a baby one. They don't have any rings yet.
That's a great thing to do, Cara. Well, this one was near a camellia, but there was no camellias flowering at the time. Maybe they like camellias as well. I don't know.
Yeah, I hope so. But no, you're a nature lover and a conservationist, the same as I've always been, and it's great, isn't it?
I'll say. I love it. Cara, great to talk to you. Thanks for the panda story.
Yeah, thank you, Macca, and love your work, and you take care and everything, and good wishes to all of the team, you know.
Thank you. Good on you.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca.
G'day.
How are ya?
Oh, I'm good. What's your name?
I'm Mako.
Mako. And how old are you, Mako?
I'm 8.
Uh-huh. And what do you ring me for?
I want to talk about footy and mountain biking.
Footy and mountain biking. Where are you, Macca? Mako?
I'm in Narooma.
Narooma, down the far south coast of New South Wales, right?
Yeah.
And you play footy? What sort of footy do you play?
Rugby league. Tackle.
Rugby league. Okay. And you like that?
Yeah.
And who do you play for?
I play for the Maroota Sharks.
The Maroota Sharks in the news. And your mountain biking? Tell me about that.
It's really fun because down at Narooma, there's actually mountain bike trails, so we get to go like every week or so.
Well, that sounds like a great life, playing rugby league and going mountain biking. You've got your own mountain biking. Who do you go mountain biking with?
I go with my sister Lullaby and my dad.
My sister Lullaby. What a lovely name. How old's Lullaby?
She's 13.
13. She's a little older than you. So there you go. Well, and... life in Narooma sounds good. What school do you go to, Mako?
I go to Narooma Public.
Narooma Public, as you would if you live in Narooma. Anything else to report?
In footy, we've been undefeated for years.
Well, that's no good. I hope you get beaten, if you know what I mean. It's no good going around undefeated, Mako. I know how you feel, but
pretty boring.
Well, it would be. It'd be a wake up call if all of a sudden somebody knocked you over. What are the other teams you play against? Give me the names of them.
We play against yesterday we had a carnival in Bega. We played Bega, Eden and the Bay.
And Bateman's Bay?
Yeah, Bateman's Bay.
All right. And so you've got the measure of all of those teams, Mako?
Yeah.
I always think when I have a little well, he's not a grandson, but he's a little, and he used to come home from soccer, and I'd say, how'd you go today? He says, oh, we won 11-0. And I think, well, I said to him, I said, Cam, you should go and play for the, they should, because he was a good little player. I said, you should go and play for the other and even things up a bit, because it's not much fun. When I used to play rugby league when I was about 17 or 18, and we'd routinely get beaten all the time because, for a start, we only usually, half the team didn't turn up. Well, I say half, we'd routinely have 11 players and you're supposed to have 13. So we'd always get beaten. And it gets a bit boring, but you still turn up. But, Mako, it'll turn around. You'll find someone will beat you sooner or later and then, yeah, it'll be good for you in lots of ways. You only learn things when you get beaten. You know what I mean?
Our coaches and stuff are going to organise like a thing against Sydney, like in Sydney.
Oh, that could be tough. But anyway, good luck, Mako. I'll see you in Naruma sometime. And thanks for ringing. It's nice to talk to you, mate.
Hopefully, yeah. Bye.
See ya. G'day, this is Mako. John, is it?
Hey, yeah, Mako. How are you?
I'm fabulous, mate.
You should have rung me on the uphill. I would have stopped for a rest. But now I've got to keep going. So I'm running a 40 for 40 Red Fort, which is a copper. It got shot here 7 years ago while on active service.
Wow.
And we're raising money for the widows and families of coppers who've been shot on service or killed.
Wow.
There's about 500 of us. And you do 4K loops. Some people do a lot, but I'm an old fire, so I only do two.
Johnny, there's no chance of you stopping, I suppose, because I can't, you know, you're a bit out of breath. And
all right. I'll stop.
Explain what you're doing. You're doing a run, a 40 for 40 run. 40 for 40.
40 for Brett Fort, who was killed.
For who?
Brett Fort.
Uh-huh.
A proper shot on active duty 7 years ago.
Right.
And we're raising money for his widows, for his widow and all other servicemen who died. And I just thought this is important because this is an integral part of our society, what these people do.
Exactly.
And there's a number of police teams in it, where people come from everywhere to run this and to donate money towards it.
And it's being run around Toowoomba this morning, is it?
Toowoomba Showgrounds.
Toowoomba Showgrounds. And the name of the policeman was Brett?
Fort, F-O-R-T-E. So that's how you get 40 kilometres for 40 for Brett.
Uh-huh. And he was shot 7 years ago, you said?
Yes. And every year, Louise McDonald, one of the top detectives here, she puts this on with support from the community.
Well, it's a wonderful thing, Johnny.
Yeah, well, I listened before about that Blake Hendricks. In the same similar way, he did a wonderful thing, didn't he? You know, the bloke that did 30 missions.
Oh, yes. A Bomber Command bloke.
Yeah,
yep.
He did a similar thing.
Yep.
It's about service above self, isn't it?
Exactly, and I just think about it, and I think, you know what I think about, John? I think about people who work, and I think about my grandpa, and he just worked and always did the right thing.
Yes.
I'm sure there are lots of people who do that, but I'm sure there are others who do as little as possible and don't take life as seriously. And I'm not saying seriously is the wrong word, but you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that if you're there to do a job, you should do it as well as you can. But I'm not sure that's always what's happening in Australia and probably around the world too. And then you think of people who went overseas and got killed.
Yep.
And I wonder how that would happen today and who in Australia and what sort of people would volunteer and who wouldn't volunteer and why they wouldn't volunteer. All those things run through my mind here in this Australia. And when someone like you rings and tell us about and tell us about, you know, something like this, which is noble, if you can use that word, which nobody uses anymore, and it's patriotic and it's wonderful. So anyway, it's pause for thought. That's what Sunday morning is, a bit pause for thought, isn't it?
I love that story about the rugby league. I played in one of those teams.
Which one?
We won.
Mako played. They haven't been here. I said, how long? He said, well, we haven't been beaten for years.
Oh,
but he won't grow up as a 8 year old until he gets a flogging.
That's so true, mate. That's so true.
Yeah,
one day I was playing fullback for Redcliffe, and University fourth grade had 3 ex internationals in there, and my only claim to fame is I stopped the other team scoring 100. I've got a switch to the line, mate. Here's a line.
All right.
See you, Maka.
Good on you, John. Thank you. Where are you, Greg?
Good morning, Maka. This is Greg. Yeah, we're in Heathcote and just out of Melbourne.
Yep.
My wife and I, we came down from the Gold Coast and we've travelled up to Shepparton, Pokemoor, where the weather's been quite freezing in the morning and not what we're used to, and about 14, 15 degrees during the daytime. There's been a lot of rain going on. The country looks absolutely beautiful and green. We're in Heathcote this morning, but I'm playing in some golf championships, heading back up to Tokemoor again. So we've got another 5-6 days of golf. But yesterday we came back via Glen Rowan, and as you know, is Kelly country, and we stopped in at the museum, and Sunday the 28th of June will be the 146 years since the siege took place at Glen Rowan, the famous siege with Ed and his brother and the two others taking on the Victorian police for the big shootout. Unfortunately, the Kelly Land animation thing was closed for a week. But we did go through the museum and saw quite a few old artifacts, and then we sort of wandered around the town where they've got all the actual sites of where things happened, even where Ned Kelly's last stand was, where they finally captured him.
This is Greg the dentist, right?
Yeah, Greg the dentist.
We met you at the Gold Coast, didn't we? And we also met you at was it
You meet me everywhere, Maka.
Somewhere. Listen, tell me about dentists, because I'm very interested. Who's marking up for dentists now? Are we still pouring, delivering lots of dentists from dentistry schools, or?
Oh yeah, many.
Yeah, really.
Hundreds, yes, yep.
What about dentists who know what they're doing? Blokes with, as the lady said, she said, I only fly with planes with 2 engines and with pilots with grey hair. What's happened to the dentists of your age, in their 50s, probably 50s? When's your peak time as a dentist, do you reckon? In your 50s, 40s, 40s well, and 50s?
I'm 71 and I'm still practicing and I'm still learning.
Mm.
So with all the new technology and stuff that goes on, a lot of digital stuff, and just different patient expectations. Patients want to be served as people, not as just patients, basically.
Exactly. And is that a problem for dentists? Is that a problem? Is it a problem for doctors? I mean, I think, sometimes I think, well, these are people that deal with people all the time, and you get a bit jaundiced when you're dealing with people because, as you know, and, most people are nice, but some be a, and you get a bit jaundiced dealing with the public, if you know what I mean. And and I assume a dentist and a doctor thinks they know best because that's their field. But if you tell them what you think or what you'd like to do, do they rail against that? What's your experience?
I learnt many, many years ago, probably 30 years ago, from my mentor in America. I used to travel back a fair bit to America in the 80s and 90s and learnt from my mentor. And he taught me that dentistry is a people game, not a clinical game. It's more about dealing with people than dealing with teeth, basically. So I took that approach on because I'm a country person, and as we're finding out up here, the country people are very, very friendly. Well, your dentist has got to become your friend, I think, or any medical profession.
Exactly.
It's more about helping people find out what they want and then helping them get it the best that they can either afford or the best that they want, basically.
Yeah, and we've changed as people, haven't we? We were talking about that before. Yes. I think about, as I said, I was talking about my grandfather who just did the right thing always, to his detriment in lots of ways because but now it's, people go out of their way to make sure that things are wonderful for the workers and we've got wellness rooms and all that sort of thing, which I suppose I'm sure you need, but I think we lose something and we gain something every day we live.
Yeah, it's dentistry. Well, as I said, there's hundreds of dentists coming out of the dental schools now, and so it's much more competitive. We've got people flying over to Thailand and China and various places having their teeth done. And
what sort of a deal do they get over there, do you think? Have you got any anecdotal evidence about that?
Yeah, I've seen patients. I've got patients that I'll write them up a treatment plan and say, well, here's what I would do if you're here, and they can't afford it. So I can't afford to do it any cheaper because of the cost of running the businesses. But so they'll fly to Thailand and they'll come back, and some of them will get some good work, but we also see the failures, and there's probably more. We see more failures than we do of the successes, and so it's very, very subject to who they find and see over there, basically.
It's all very interesting, isn't it, Greg? And I think, people. I don't know. You want to become a dentist, and you become a dentist, and you look at it as it's something where you earn money, but it's more than that, isn't it? As you say, it's really about, and whether you're working on the checkout or you're a truck driver, it's all about people. The whole thing is about people, isn't it?
That's what keeps me in the game, I think, Macca. The technology's improved. I mean, dentistry is basically the same. You drill, fill, and bill, basically, as I used to say it. But, dealing with the people, you build relationships, and I've moved around a bit over the nearly 50 years. I've been doing this nearly as long as you've been doing your radio show, as I keep telling you. And we still keep doing it, and we still probably enjoy it. So
we're talking about looking at our outside broadcast that we've done over the years and where we've been and stuff. Did I see you at Burley Heads, or was it Noosa? Yeah, or Gold Coast? Remember we saw you at the Gold Coast. That was at the start of the G'day Tour in 2009. Yeah.
Yeah, Winter Sun many years ago was the first time I met you, but I've been listening to you since 1980, 1981, when I lived in the Riverland picking grapes and picking oranges on the houseboat on the Murray. The kids would wake up to Macca in the morning, and now the grandkids are waking up to Macca.
They're very cute, as I remember too, because I met them on that OB a couple of years ago. Good on you, Greg. I'll keep in touch, mate. Macca.
Keep going. I love your show.
Thanks, mate. Bye.
Okay, bye.
G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. This is Joe here, giving you a call from the other side of Burren Junction on my way to Walgett. It's a little bit cloudy today. There's a bit of a green tinge in the earth, but I think the farmers certainly need a lot more rain out this way.
Yeah, there's been a bit around the place, Joe. What do you do, Joe?
Macca, I'm very passionate about the role of Aboriginal soldiers in World War I and have recently come back from France, where I attended this year's Anzac Day commemorations and also opened an exhibition at the Sir John Monash Centre in Villers Bretonneux on a project that I've called Bringing Their Spirits Home.
Yeah. Tell me more.
And the aim of the exhibition is to highlight some of the 31 of approximately 1,200 Aboriginal men who enlisted in World War I. And these 31, out of a total of 90 that I've visited over the last few years, are soldiers who never made it back home, but I've taken photographs of their headstones and put together their stories and given them back to families back in Australia who otherwise may not ever get to see their loved one's grave.
Yeah, in some ways. We talked about this last week, about something on the week before. There's something noble about a cemetery where you see those, you walk into the cemetery and all of a sudden you're confronted with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of gravestones. And we didn't bring people home from that war or the Second World War, did we?
No, we didn't. But the French people in some of those little villages and where those battles were held have looked after those graves since the times when those cemeteries were first formed. And I'm not sure what word you use in describing the feeling and just the serenity of some of those places, but it's a special feeling. And I was proud as an Australian and an Aboriginal man to stand in front of those soldiers' graves and at least say things like to recite the ode and to play the last post on my phone.
Good on you.
Thank them for their service.
It's a great thing you do, mate. Great thing you do. You should have rung us from over there.
Yeah, mate, I tried to get on to you before I went, but when I was there, I don't know whether I would have been able to get past the cold. It was one of the coldest days I've ever spent over there. Very cold.
Good on you, Joel. Talk to you again. I'd love to talk to you. G'day, this is Macca.
Yeah, g'day, Macca. This is Andy, mate, out here in the Simpson Desert with Redcliffe Steve.
You sound like your next door, Andy. I remember that.
I do. Well, that's the wonders of Starlink, isn't it, I suppose?
Yes, and everybody bags Elon, but yes, give me Starlink, mate.
Mate, I hate Starlink around the campsite. Everyone sits in the middle of nowhere on their phones. But I've just gone to the dark side because the phone service is so poor in Australia. If you want to call anyone, it's about the only option you've got.
Well, I think it's yes. I'm not. I try to stay off the phone if someone rings you. But yes, it's a people are wedded to their phones. I hope you're the only reason you use Starlink, Andy, is to call me right from the Simo.
I did. I was listening to you on the radio, and I was listening. I thought, well, I'm out in the Simpson Desert, and there's not much action out here at the moment because it's totally flooded across Air Creek, and I noticed the other day the Queensland Parks have closed the Queensland side of the Simpson Desert Park. And they've shut it to August the 31st. So there's massive amounts of water out here in running through Air Creek, which is quite unreal because we camped on it last night and the bird life, and it is just phenomenal out here. It's unreal. You think it's a desert, but you turn your torch on at night and see what's crawling around the ground and stuff. It's absolutely living underneath you.
Well, it's lovely because, I live in the suburbs and there's no little insects. I used to, look at insects when I was a kid. But, people have told me that before out there in the desert. There's insects and butterflies and all sorts of things around the place.
Yeah, there's masses amount of birds. All this water is still running through. And it's running through to Lake Eyre, so that's still got a way to go yet.
Yeah.
And I did notice before you said that Birdsville was cut off. It's not. You can quite easily access Birdsville at the moment.
Oh, can you? I thought it was.
Yeah.
Somebody said. But anyway, well, that's good. From which way? From anywhere?
Well, we came out from Windora out through there. It was closed for a few hours for a day with some rainstorm that went through the other day. But that was minor. But we came up from Windora. I think you might be able to get there from Erromanga. And, it doesn't seem to be a problem. Actually, the road from Windora to Birdsville is in beautiful condition. It's almost like a bitumen road, the dirt.
Now, Andy, tell me this. You said the campground is full. You're out there on your Todd with who? Who are you with?
Out with a mate, Redcliffe Steve.
Redcliffe, of course. Redcliffe Steve. So give my regards to Redcliffe Steve. Andy, you said there's no one out there with you. You're on your Todd out there, aren't you?
Oh, no, mate. No, there's no one out here in the desert at the minute. It's very, very, very quiet.
And
Birdsville was pretty quiet.
Yeah. What finds you out there, Andy? How come did you say to Redcliffe Steve, I feel like going out to the Simpson? Or what happened? Why are you there?
That's exactly what happened. Yeah,
that's exactly what happened.
That's exactly how it worked. God, and mate, yeah. I've done a lot of outback travel and stuff, so I've been through the Simpson quite a few times and many other four-wheel drive. And I just love getting out here. And I hadn't been out for a while, so I needed a fix. Mm. And I thought it's worth going out to have a look at Air Creek. So I suppose we'll do about 5,000 k's round trip. But we've just gone visited, you know, through Cunnamulla and Thargaminda and Erromanga and all of those places, Quilpie, and yeah, it's just been lovely.
Lovely stuff. Andy, where's home for you?
Redcliffe.
Of course, I should have guessed that. Redcliffe too.
I'm probably Redcliffe Andy. There you go.
Exactly. And you've got a football team now, haven't you? Well, you've always had one.
We have the fantastic Dolphins, mate. Fins up, and we're kicking butt at the minute.
I know, they're going very well, aren't they? Very well, which is I suppose that's good. I'm weaned myself off football. I've been, you know, since I was a toddler, I loved footy, but I've found there's other things in life too, you know, so not to get too concerned because it's changed, mate. You know what? The scrums are just a nonsense. I mean, it really is a nonsense. And calling somebody a hooker, there's no hooking going on. It's strange, Andy. There's no competition for the ball anymore. No competition, except if you tackle somebody and wrench the ball out of his hands or something.
I know it's changed. We were having that debate around the campfire last night.
You should have got onto your Starlink. It's really amazing, isn't it, Starlink? It's amazing. We've got NBN and all this, but everybody's Starlink's the deal. We could have maybe saved a whole lot of money if not going for NBN, if you know what I mean.
You know, back in the early 90s, I actually sold mobile phones in Broome. Mm. And that was back in the days when it was 3G. And you could drive around Australia and drive up to a town, and 30 k's out of the town, you'd have reception.
Yeah.
And 30 k's the other side. So you had a big bandwidth of thing. As they've progressively gone from 3G to 4G to 5G
to 6G to 7G, yeah.
It's just that circle around the town has just shrunken smaller and smaller and smaller. So the service has deteriorated terribly, hence why, you know, you just go and get Starlink.
Go and get Starlink, yes. amazing bloke, aren't they selling shares in X or whatever he's got? And that's all going. He'll be the first trillionaire, I think, isn't it? The story.
They did float it, and I think it raised over $2 trillion. But unfortunately, we're in the desert and didn't get the stock market on time, so we missed that one.
Well, you should have got on Starlink, mate, and said, buy, sell, buy, sell, sell, buy.
Yeah, dead right. But anyway, look, the country's beautiful. I will say the operators we've been have been saying it has been quiet, but it started to pick up the last week or two.
Yeah.
So there are some people moving around. But as your previous caller was saying, mate, I'm sure the towns would love to see more and more people out here. And the country is superb. Like, it's pretty good. It's nice. And around Windora and that, it's like England. Honestly, you drive along the side of the road, it is so green.
Redcliffe Steve, it's great to talk to you, mate. What's it like listening to the radio out there in the Simo?
It's lovely. Well, we're challenged for stations, Macca, so you've got a monopoly.
Oh, I wouldn't have thought. I would have rather you said, look, we've got hundreds of stations we can listen to, but we tune into you, Macca.
Oh, mate. We'd still be listening to you, mate.
Good on you, Andy. Good on you, Stevie.
All right, mate. Steve's
the silent partner. Yeah, good on you.
Have a good one.
See ya.
Bye. See you, buddy. Bye.
And Tanny, that, you know, that tea you brought me at 7 o'clock, it's cold.
Letters, tweets and faxes.
Yep.
We get stacks,
we do.
Stacks of email.
We do. And just what Marilyn was talking about, people are protesting, says Peter Williams, about feral horses and Brummies in the Snowies. If you want feral horses, round them up like they did years ago and put them on your property or your organisation's property at your expense. He says, feral animals have a great impact on national parks. National parks are for Australia's unique wildlife. They're not for feral horses, dogs, rabbits, camels, foxes, buffalo, pigs, goats, deer, etc., etc. A lot of deer down there too in the snowies. A lot of deer. Or any invasive species, in my opinion, says Peter Williams of Wollongong. Thank you, Peter. Humans living with animals of all sorts, sharks and brumbies, just to name a few. Rick Kemp says, the Queensland silver wattle, Acacia poda lyrilifolia, has burst into its annual winter cheeriness with its bright golden balls colour. Such a great contrast against the grey and drab of the short days. Add some winter sun and we have a great uplift at this time of year, a great harbinger, it's a Shakespearean word, of the other wattle varieties to follow. Probably one of those words that Shakespeare invented. He invented hundreds, didn't he? And from my friend Hans, who rang last week, and I remember he's speaking about mushrooms, but he says, come down sometime and collect some mushrooms, probably in autumn. But he says, in my nearly daily walks, I make photos of roos, snakes, echidnas and cookers and send same to my relatives and business contacts overseas. Apart from being a typical ochre bloke now... Isn't that nice? After well over 40 years in Australia, I claim to be the only person in our country with an official sheet music seller certificate, Musikalienhandler, as we say in German. I did an apprenticeship of this vocation in Germany many years ago and came here as a business migrant in this capacity. I'm an independent importer of sheet music. Sheet music, I've got stacks of sheet music at home. You're a trombone player or a trombone owner yourself, says Hans. If I remember correctly, therefore sheet music is known to you. Think of, for example, the Arban trombone method, I'd say. Selling classical sheet music has been my profession ever since, and I would not like to change it unless I could become a wildlife photographer. I'll hear back from you sometime, Mecca, says Hans, one of our regular listeners. And quickly from Jackie Kilner, she says, that bloke you spoke to last week, Phil from Derby, who was doing the dishes and sweeping the floor and talking to you. Oh, mate. On the noise. Phil mentioned he competed in a bike race and won the event in 1977. I googled Phil Stoker, always wanting to learn a bit more. There was an interesting article on him in Dirt Bike Australia magazine. Now I know who Phil Stoker is. Mac, I called him a bit of a legend. Thanks, says Jackie, and thank you. Give us a ring, 1300 700 222. Apart from brumbies, of course, sharks are in the news. And the late Kiwi White, who used to go tuna spotting in Australia and overseas in the Northern Hemisphere. Some years ago, he told me a story about Gallipoli, but also about sharks. He knew about sharks. I remember him telling me about a white pointer that followed his little tinny into the boat ramp at Port Lincoln with its nose like a Nautilus submarine out of the thing, just following the boat, maybe looking for a handout. Firstly, Kiwi about Gallipoli and then about some sharks.
I thought I'd tell you one little thing that happened 2 years ago. I just finished the season in San Diego and was about to come home and I got a phone call and they said, Kiwi, would you like to go to Turkey? And I said, yes, that'd be really interesting. So they said, okay, you fly to Hawaii for a couple of days and then fly back to Sydney. Meet us there and we'll have your tickets and we'll fly on to Turkey. So a couple of days later, I landed in Istanbul. We had a little Cessna 172 and we flew down to an island just off the coast of Gallipoli Beach. And of course, I've heard about this and read about this, but I'd never ever been there before, even though I'd been in Turkey before. So the island we landed on was about 15 miles directly offshore off Gallipoli, and it was a military base. But in my daily flying with a young Australian pilot, we used to fly right along the coast of Gallipoli Beach. And I just found it absolutely fascinating to fly along the beach at 400 or 500 feet looking for schools of tuna and watching the fishermen there. It was beautiful blue water, clear water, sandy beaches. And then you could see the rugged coastline of the actual Gallipoli Peninsula. And I found it very spiritual. Yeah, I just felt, I used to get goosebumps up and down my neck and feel really emotional thinking about the young diggers, the Australians and the New Zealanders and the English, all clamouring up the beach, coming off those longboats and things like that and having the Turks sit up there and just mow them down. And I just found it absolutely fantastic experience. And also working in that movie Gallipoli years ago, that gave me a little bit more insight. And to actually go to the place where it all happened was just something that I'm really pleased that I did.
Gallipoli was filmed here in Lincoln, wasn't it?
Yeah. Apparently they sent a whole lot of scouts flying around Australia and they arrived here in this Port Lincoln and they worked up and down the coast and they found a little area up just near Coffin Bay up in the peninsula and they found that it looked very similar to, I think, Lone Pine and those places like that.
Isn't it amazing that the name is Coffin Bay and it looked like Gallipoli? So many people killed at Gallipoli.
Yeah, that's correct. They brought all these people over and they filmed the film here and had a lot of people working in it. And that was a very good experience too. And that film's been very well received around the world. And I think it just opens up more opportunities for younger people to realise that Australians and New Zealanders and people sacrifice their lives for our life today. Flying 400 feet, 500 feet above it, and you can see where all the battlefields were, and you can see all the memorials, you can see all the cemeteries and things like that there. So that's the main thing I wanted to tell you about.
Kiwi, you're a tuna spotter, and where there's tuna, there's always sharks.
I don't know if you know that the CSIRO have a tracking program, and they've tagged four or five great whites, and they send off signals through the satellite. We found that quite a few of them have gone on a direct track from Neptune Islands up past Coffin Bay, up past Ceduna, through the islands, past Cactus Beach where everybody surfs, including myself, and they finished up in the head of the bight. One of them went further to Esperance, and the other ones came back along this highway, they call it a highway, where these sharks seem to go. It's maybe like homing pigeons. They may have some way of navigating, and it's basically straight line stuff, and nearly all the sharks follow the same pattern, with little deviations in some of the islands and the seal colonies where they go in there to check on, you know, their feed. If they can find a young seal or an old seal, they'll chomp it up. The tagging program has a week's delay. And the reason for that is that they don't want people to go out and look on the internet and find out there's a shark here off the 100 yards off the jetty at Tumby Bay. Say they don't want people to go there to kill it because they want them to preserve them, and that's why there's always a week's delay. And in a week's time, that shark could be up at Port Augusta or it could be back in Neptune Islands, because they're actually very nomadic fish, and people in the past believed that they were localised, but they've proved them different. Some sharks have even swum from Neptune Islands right around to Shark Bay in Western Australia, and then another one's been right up to Rockhampton, I believe, or Townsville, and then come back here. So they're quite amazing creatures. We still see a few sharks from the plains, but not as many as we had in the past. And maybe we're just in the wrong place at the wrong time. But one of the other spotters, Mozzie Stevens, and his pilot, Derek Heyman, they saw a great white shark just off the Ceduna recently in the last few weeks of tuna spotting. And they said it was in very shallow water just after the end of the runway where they turned off. There it was, you know, so... And I've seen the biggest shark I've ever seen between Bell Point and Point Sinclair Bay. That was quite a few years ago, but that was huge.
Kiwi, as always, great to talk to you, mate. Nice to catch up.
Okay, thanks very much, Macca, and all the best. Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, here we are in Australia, and the great thing about Australia is surf life saving and beaches and golden beaches, and we all go for a swim and a surf. And all of a sudden, that's been turned on its head, because apparently there's been shark attacks on Sydney beaches, and it could be somewhere else. I can't believe it. I cannot believe it. So the very thing that defines us as Australians, and one of those things is surf and the beach and surf life saving and nippers and all that sort of stuff, all of a sudden that's thrown into sharp relief because of what's happened. I love sharks, but in their own place. G'day, this is Macca.
Good morning, Macca. This is Bimby from Yass.
Hi.
I met you last year when you were passing through, but just talking about everything that's Australian, I'm just looking out the window. Mm. The Australian flag is flying on our flagpole, and there's a cockatoo sitting on the top of the flagpole, and it is just glorious.
Yes.
So what I'm ringing about, Macca, is I want to pay tribute to our beautiful, iconic Brumbies.
Uh-huh.
They have been part of what make Australians. These wonderful animals carried our soldiers to battle in the Boer War and the World War I. They led the opening procession of the 2000 Olympic Games.
Yep.
And now they've been used recently in a remedial way to help people with mental health issues and post-traumatic stress.
Horses are great.
And horses are great. And now the New South Wales government is determined to exterminate them. They're rounding them up with quad bikes, which nobody else can ride in the national park, and shooting them, leaving the carcasses and the foals to be a smorgasbord for the wild dogs, the wild pigs, the foxes, the feral cats. And these horses, yes, they need to be, the numbers need to be reduced in the national parks, but they've been there for over 100 years. And Banjo Paterson wrote that magnificent poem.
Yep.
The Man from Snowy River, and then there were the two films. And the government just wants to exterminate part of, yes, a lot of city people have probably never sat on a hill and watched those magnificent animals just grazing in the park and then crossing the river. And yes, that it is a sensitive area, but the deers are doing more damage, and so are the pigs and the horses have ever done.
And we
just need to protect our horses.
Yeah, well, we need to protect everything. I mean, we need to clear it. You know, you're exactly right. There's too many ferals everywhere, but we don't care about it. And then all of a sudden, the Brumbies are in the crosshairs, if you like. But
they're the biggest animals, so they're the easy target.
Yeah, but the pigs are terrible all around Australia, yes. And the deer, yep. Especially in the Snowy Mountains and in the Alps. There's deer everywhere, and they're huge brutes. And even in national parks here south of Sydney, they're full of deer, and there's no place for them there. No place at all, and they should be gone. Gonski. But I don't, look, Bimmy, I don't know what the solution is, but as Marilyn was just talking before when she rang me last week, and she was getting a horse from a lady who's rescuing some. And when I was down in Dalgetty a couple of years ago, we did a program down there, but I met and we've got some friends down there, you know, that we met through the program, of course, but there's a bloke there called Paul Steptoe, and I knew Paul because Jason, our correspondent here from time to time, he played cricket, and Paul Steptoe used to play for Petersham, Marrickville, and he used to play for St George, and he also played a bit for New South Wales. But he was down there trying to rescue, and he had some Brumbies that he'd got out of the park, and he had them under the bridge, I think, at Dalgetty. But, you know, there's a few.
I've got a beautiful one.
But there's a few, you know, I don't know what you do, but it'd be nice to be able to muster them with the quad bikes and get them all out, or most of them out there, and put them, because everyone would love a horse. I mean, you could sell them for $100 or, you know, something, and who wouldn't want a horse if you got, and I don't know, there must be a way, but, you know.
The sad thing is, Macca, that they keep the understory down a bit, and the next time a massive bushfire goes through, they're going to have more undergrowth there, and nobody will be able to stop that fire. And the feral animals all breed with litters. Horses breed one at a time.
Yeah.
And they're just leaving all those other carnivores and scavengers to build up, because they're eating the leftovers of the poor unfortunate horses.
It's like
the foals are just left to die.
It's like the road that's closed now on the Great Western Highway, and that's been a problem for years and years and years, but nobody does anything about it. You would think that the Brumbies could have been progressively culled in, you know, rounded up, and you get 50 or 100 and get them out, and then, you know, do that every winter or every summer, I don't know, every summer, and just keep doing that and doing that and doing that. But you need to do that. Because national parks or anything in your life, radio programs, they've got to be managed. It's got to be managed. So you can't just, oh, God, we've got a problem. All of a sudden, but that's what happens here in Australia. All of a sudden, we've got a problem with the Great Western Highway. It's blocked. So
we never think things through.
No.
Well, and the money spent on this could be helping a lot of people that are finding the cost of living excessive.
Well, I assume there's people whose job is to manage national parks and to look at what's been happening. And this has not been happening now. This has been happening for 50, 100 years, and so you should be managing. But look, I don't know, Bimmy, there's no solution to it, but I get what you're saying.
Thanks for your time, Macca.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. You're in Yass, are you?
Yes, I am. I have a lovely Brumby that I'm about to go and feed. She's gorgeous.
Is the cockatoo still on the flagpole? You were just making that up, weren't you, really?
No, I was not. No truth.
The cockatoo truth, on the flagpole, yeah. All right. Good on you, Bimby.
Thank you, Macca. I've listened to your program, I think, ever since its inception.
Yeah, since 1900. Good on you. See ya.
Bye.
Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Hey, good morning, Macca. This is Patrick.
Hi, Patrick.
How are you, young man?
Mate, this is the home straight. It's like the Melbourne Cup, and they're going down the straight now, and it's the hardest part of the race. But anyway, I'm surviving, Patrick. What's on your mind?
Well, I am absolutely privileged beyond belief to be fishing the mighty Fitzroy River.
At Rockhampton or... In Western Australia?
In the Kimberleys, Macca.
Kimberleys. Yep.
up in the Kimberleys. And
there's a Fitzroy at Rocky too, you know that.
Say again?
There's a Fitzroy at Rocky. Rockhampton's got on the Fitzroy River.
That's correct. Yes, yeah. It is indeed. Yeah. And I fish barramundi with fly.
A fly fisher?
Fly fisherman, yeah. I use the odd occasional lure, but 9 out of 10 give me a fly any day. And just last night I had a 92.5 barramundi at the end of the fly line. And I said, well, I don't care to land this to, and we just see what it does. And it ran and it jumped and all the usual exciting things that barra do. And eventually landed and I go, holy fiddlesticks, that's a big fish.
And so what did you do with it? You've caught it and going to eat it?
Yeah, look, the rule that my follow-up here is anything over 55, you can keep, and anything under 80, you can keep. Anything above those, it's the type of fish that the boys turn into girls as part of their growth. And so basically you're releasing tomorrow's school of fish, basically.
Yeah.
And so that's paramount for me because, I mean, beautiful fish to eat and just even more beautiful to catch.
Whereabouts on the Fitzroy are you?
I'm in actually a place called Fitzroy Crossing.
Oh, yeah, the Crossing, the Crossing.
Yeah, I'm just out behind the Crossing Inn.
Yep, know it. Is there much water in the Fitzroy?
It's down from where it has been. There's still water flowing through. Unfortunately, the last three floods have come through here this last year and the start of this year. I easily have taken another 30 metres off the bank side. That makes sense?
Yep.
It's just levelling it. And the centre of the river seems to be more flatter than it used to be because of all the sand that's coming down.
Uh-huh.
And I was over visiting Broome last week. I was on a librarian course and doing some music with the Broome Senior High School. And on my way back, I decided to spend the week in Wellair. And you won't believe what I caught, my friend.
No, I'll leave it to you. What?
Bull shark.
A bull shark?
I got a bull shark on a lure.
Where at?
It's called a Barra Classic. And I recorded the video, and it was a lot more colourful language than I've ever heard. We'll see on the.
Whereabouts was this, Patrick?
Under Wellair Bridge.
Where's that?
Wellair. It's about 175, 200 kilometres from Broome, and 235 or something from Fitzroy. So it's on the Great Northern Highway.
And that's on the coast.
That's no, that's inland. That's heading as you come through Horse Creek, you go through Fitzroy, you cross Wellair.
So it's in fresh water.
It's in fresh water, yes.
Are you sure it was a bull shark?
Oh, bless your heart. Of course. Should we have bull sharks up in the Swan River in Perth?
Yeah, but I wouldn't have thought you'd. Well, I know they're. Yeah, we've been talking about sharks this morning, and bull sharks are fairly treacherous sorts of things. They're the ones that'll attack you. Patrick, tell me your story. You're in Broome for why? You're a librarian's course.
Yes, that's one course I've done. Mac, I'm up here with a bunch of lovely people. I'm signing up for my fourth year come July. I work as a phys ed teacher, I work as a musician, and I work as in the carpentry area. So I teach woodwork and music and phys ed. And now, I don't know who put my hand up for a librarian, but it seems I've gone up there. But that's another ticket on the docket when it comes to say, yes, I can manage this, I can do that. And it's just a wonderful community to work for. We've got so much starting to go right up here, and there's so many people to be grateful for up here with the work that they're doing. We've got a local sergeant, a couple of sergeants that are doing a wonderful job in town, and we've got people running wonderful footy that are now back in full swing. And the town is really picking up, and local community organisations that run night space for the kids after school. And
what are you talking about now? What place?
I'm talking, yes, yeah, same line of work. I work with Fitzroy Valley District High School.
Oh, so you're there at the crossing? Yep.
I'm fishing at the crossing right now, the crossing inn.
And your school is the Fitzroy School?
I teach at the Fitzroy School, yeah.
Yeah. I'll tell you.
My morning will start at 6:30 in the morning. I'll get up and get the bus and then go straight out to two or three local communities and pick up the kids and bring them in for breakfast in the morning at school. And they have playtime and then straight into class. And the numbers are picking up big time, and we're just over the moon with it.
We've done a couple of outside broadcasts at Fitzroy Crossing. Both of them were rippers. One at the Crossing Inn. The new one, the newish one, and just outside that, and one up the near the rodeo grounds, and they were both great. And it's a great, I love Fitzroy Crossing. But I'll tell you, you want to hear my Fitzroy Crossing story?
Absolutely.
We were there one evening, and we called into the crossing. I don't think it was when we were doing an OB. We were on the way. It might have been on a good day tour, but I don't think so. That was 2010. Probably it was a concert tour, and we were doing some. Anyway, say it was 20 years ago, and we're in the old crossing inn and serving a meal, and we're sitting out in the garden having a steak or something. And this bloke and this lady walked through, and she was all dressed up like a space outfit. Yeah, she looked like a space person, and she had something on her head and a pair of, some sort of steel trousers. Steel trousers, metal outfit, and on her top, round her bosoms, she had a little metal thing, right? And on her back, she had a gas cylinder, and both her breasts were sort of like they had the metal, and they were like Bunsen burners. So she turned them. No, this is a true story. I'll never forget it. This is in the Crossin, mm-hmm. And I love the Crossin. She was there. She can confirm this. But and she had like both the they had the and she was walking through, and I just said, "What's that?" And she said something like, "Oh, we're going to be in a play," something like that. But and I don't know whatever happened to her, but she, yes, it was a sight.
I can imagine. Well, the wonderful thing about what we get to do here in Fitzroy is that we got so many beautiful places to fish, and the locals are actually stunned sometimes when I land five or six in a row. On fly, and they say, "Well, I have to get me one of those." I said, "Well, you get yourself a fly rod, and I'll show you how to use it, and we'll go from there." So I've got three lined up already, and apparently there's another two that are getting theirs over the next couple of weeks. So there you go.
Well, excuse me, my voice is gone. I've been talking too much, Pat. Yeah. I've just got to have a little. It's all right. Nice to talk to you, Patrick.
Yeah, you remember that song from John Williamson, "Things Will Never Be the Same in Port Lincoln." Once they roll the cameras in.
Yes,
and then the Cootamata Wattles. "Don't go looking through that old camper box, woman." You remember that one from John Williamson?
I do.
He's a gorgeous singer. Absolutely. He nails everything he does. It's just fantastic.
How long have you been in Oz, Patrick?
As I say to people, I'll buy you a pint if you can guess.
I'd say 40 years.
Yes, very good. I'm 42 years now here.
Wow.
You are the closest in a long time, my friend. Yes, 42 years ago is the best thing I've ever done.
Do I win a prize?
No, you're 2 years shy, so unfortunately, next time.
You're a hard man.
You shout me up whenever you are close to Fitzroy or back in Mandurah in Western Australia. And I'll definitely, you win the prize.
Good on you, Patrick. Thank you. G'day, Duncan.
How are you this morning?
Dunk, I'm fine, mate. What's on your mind? What's happening? Where are you?
So we're, my wife and I are just heading back home to Bendigo from Hamilton. We went to Hamilton last night. It was the Australian Superfine Wool Growers Association's annual dinner.
Oh, wow.
And prize giving. So we were at that last night. It was a wonderful night.
Was the dinner any good?
Yeah, the dinner wasn't too bad. It was at the Hamilton Golf Club.
Yeah? What'd you have?
It wasn't too bad. I had chicken and my wife had beef cheek. Oh.
So they do it one alternate. You get the beef cheek, you get the chicken, you get the beef cheek, you get. Is that how they did it?
Yeah, that's the way they do it. When we were first married, my wife and I, if we ever went to a function, it was that we always used to eat half our meal and then swap meals. So we got, got a bit of both. But yeah, there was none of that last night. But I think the beef cheek must have been better.
The fine wool growers, the fine wool growers of what, Victoria or Australia?
No, Australia. Australian super fine wool growers. Yeah, there should have been there. Yeah, you should have been. There was people from, I think the furthest one came from Sally's Flat up in New South Wales, up near Mudgee.
Uh-huh.
They'd come down for it. But it was good. They had some beautiful fleeces on display. The winning fleeces were magnificent. And
Wonderful stuff, isn't it, wool? When you go to the show and you see all these fleeces there behind, you know, sometimes they're in glass cases, but it's just a wonderful... It's a wonderful fabric, isn't it? It's just a wonderful fibre, beautiful.
It really is. It really is a wonderful fibre. In fact, Macca, I can't understand why people are so worried about looking after themselves and eating sardines and worrying about themselves when they should be wearing wool and fixing the world.
Yeah, well, the world needs a bit of fixing, mate, wherever you look. And it's in turmoil, really, the world, everywhere, including in Australia. You know, you just look at what's happening in Australia now. You can't go for a swim on a Sydney beach now. That's really ridiculous.
You can't swim in a river upstream from up inland where you get eaten by a bull shark.
Yeah. I couldn't believe that. That's in freshwater. They're cunning things, those bull sharks. And you... the world's gone. I should play that song by Digger. Kel, the world's gone crazy. Cotillion, the ladies are dancing alone. The sidemen all want to be frontmen, and the frontmen all want to go home. Anyway, well, sorry, Dunk.
Isn't the saying the whole world's crazy except for you and I? And I wonder about you sometimes.
Exactly, Dunk. You grow fine wool, do you?
Yeah, we do. Yep, we grow super fine wool.
Uh huh.
Yeah, we're one of the growers. We've been growing it, so our flock is actually. Steeped in history, we can trace out the ancestry of our flock back to the Elector of Saxony when Saxony was a country.
Well, I suppose that's important. Dunk,
of course it is.
Dunk, did you win a gong last night? No,
we never won anything last night.
No, I never won anything either, really. It's cool.
Sometimes
I did, but yeah, it's never win the lottery or anything like that. Nothing useful.
Right, that's exactly right. Never anything useful.
Oh dear. Well, yeah, that would have been nice to be just to move amongst all those people from Sally's Flat and wherever, and just to talk to them. That would have been nice.
Yeah, it was. It was wonderful. All people of like mind. We actually had a great guest speaker last night too from AWI. Mm. Holly Byrne. She got up and spoke and told us about how the industry's getting on. She was wonderful, actually. It was really good to, they did some farm tours as well yesterday. So we went around and looked at a few other farms around Hamilton. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. It's wonderful. There's still people in the industry that's, you know, it is a struggling industry and there is not many people coming up through it anymore.
And just as I say, you know, I can't believe, you know, surf life saving and nippers and stuff and beaches and golden sands is Australian as meat pies, and so is wool growing and fleece, and it's all part of us. And so good on you, Dunk. I wish I'd have been there, but, anyway, another time.
Will you wet your whistle, Macca, and get your throat better so you can keep on talking on?
I talk too much. I talk too much. Good on you, Dunk.
Cheers, Macca.
Nice to talk to you. Bye.
You too. Bye.
Thanks for your cards, and sorry you couldn't get through this morning. It just gets busy here in the morning. Thank you to Lee Kelly, and thank you to Peter Clemson, and thank you to Tanya. There you go. I hope you enjoyed our highlights package. If you want the full Monty, listen in every Sunday morning from 5:30 till 10 and tune into Australia. If you see me on the road, stop and say g'day. Contact me at maccatracks@gmail.com. Talk to you Sunday.